Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. For this episode, the podcast heads to Repertorio Español for the very first time for Así Van Los Fantasmas de México, Primera Parte, by playwright Matthew Paul Olmos and directed by Estefania Fadul. While I believe this might be the first episode of the podcast about a show performed entirely in a language other than English, it was originally written in English and performed at La Mama last year. As you'll hear from this interview, the play still works wonderfully, though perhaps differently, in Spanish, as translated by Bernardo Cubría. And now, here are director Estefania Fadul and playwright Matthew Paul Olmos. Take a listen.
I like to start with the guests' names on the mic, so there's a voice with a name.
I'm Estefania Fadul.
And you are?
I directed Soga the Ghost of Mexico Part 1 in Spanish.
What's the title?
Así Van Los Fantasmas de México, Primera Parte.
Excellent.
Matthew Paul Olmos, I'm the playwright of Soga the Ghost of Mexico Part 1.
And the play is presented in Spanish, as Estefania said, and we are at Repertorio Español on 27th Street. The show is a whole... There's so much going on. There's so many different themes that you're dealing with. And I guess the place that I'd want to start is where all of this, like how all this kind of like collided for you, Matt, in writing the piece. Where did the piece come from for you?
You know, I'd wanted to write something about the drug wars for a while. And then a few years ago, in the research, which is just overwhelming, I realized for some reason that there was just so much information that it had to be more than one play. And so I started toying with the idea of doing like a cycle of plays. So now it's a three-play cycle. And then I stumbled upon this story about Marisol Valles Garcia, who was this young woman who decided to become a police chief in Mexico and no one else would take the position. And I just started researching her story, and this idea all of a sudden came out about, you know, taking her story and sort of twisting it a little bit and making it into a bit of a magic realist story where this character of music comes in and acts as a beacon of hope for Mexico, really. So for me, that, and then from then on, it just sort of wrote itself, you know. And then right now I'm in the middle of the second and third plays as well, writing-wise. So.
Writing them, so they're not complete yet.
The part two is complete, and then we're writing, there's music in it, so we're writing music for it, and then part three, I'm very beginning.
Was it written in English or in Spanish?
They're in English, and then this one was translated originally for a production in Mexico, and then it was sort of a second draft came about for this production, which is very cool.
Estefania, what brought you to the project to do it here at Repertorio?
I was applying for their Van Leer Directing Fellowship, which is for young directors, under 30 Hispanic directors in New York. And it was actually through a friend of mine who had heard Matt's work. And so she put me in touch with him, and I read the play, and I loved it. And, you know, mostly it's so topical, and it's also so theatrical, which is exciting. So, yeah, that's how I got involved.
It is super theatrical, and also I love the magical realist aspect of it. This, like you said, music is a character, which I imagine was a little tricky to direct. How did you work with that as... first off, who's your sound designer? Because it was excellent.
Yeah.
And B, how did you direct that into the show? Mm-hmm. Because as an amateur sound designer myself, I know how difficult we can be to work with.
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I told the actors there's a, you know, sixth character missing basically in rehearsal. So we have to make room for this later. And so Chad Raines, our sound designer, who's amazing, he came on board. And at the beginning, you know, it was just mostly him throwing ideas at me and me kind of giving him feedback and that conversation between the two of us outside of rehearsal. And then about the third week of rehearsal, he started coming in and messing with things in rehearsal and with the actors. From the beginning, the idea was that the sound designer would be very involved in the rehearsal process. And really, I mean, as you said, it's a character and it's a soundscape throughout the whole thing. So yeah, it was very important to have him involved with the actors, for the actors to get used to that. And then we started, you know, he would send us some sound clips that we could play in rehearsal if he couldn't be there. So yeah, that was, it was an interesting, I've never done a show with this much sound. So that was really cool because it really does, you know, create a whole different atmosphere for it.
And speaking of sound, I was actually really surprised to learn that you said it was originally written in English and then it was translated, and this is kind of a different version of that translation, because it sounds so in the Spanish language to me. Mm. It does not feel translated. Mm. And of course, this is coming from my super limited Spanish. I braved this without the translation, right. Which is maybe a mistake. I probably overestimated my skills. But I understood your play. But there's something about the sound of the play in Spanish that to me made a lot more sense. Mm. And so for that, I was grateful that I forewent the English translation. Mm. So all of that is to say, this is a Spanish language play being about she was on a border town, right? Or very close.
It was near the border, yeah.
Yeah. But on the Mexican side, mm-hmm. done entirely in Spanish, presented in New York City. And where we, of course, have a large Spanish-speaking population, mm-hmm. but when we go to the theater in New York, we almost always expect we're going to get English. Mm-hmm. Repertorio Español is, of course, a wonderful exception, right. But why this play in this voice when it was originally written in English here in this place where English is predominant? Can you just kind of speak to that?
I'm not a fluent Spanish speaker, so I write everything in English. But what I think is really interesting about it is that, like, no matter how much it is about Mexico or the U.S. or the relationship between the two countries, like, I write from obviously an American point of view, even if I'm trying to sort of not indict, but maybe sort of talk about the U.S.'s involvement in certain things. So for me, it was really fascinating to see it translated. And it was actually translated by an actor who was in the original English premiere at La Mama last year. So someone who knows the play really well, knows my work really well. And so his translation, I think, is very, it feels, I've been told, you know, very me, actually. But I think what's interesting is that, like, it feels like in some ways, I've been told kind of what you just said, though, that, like, there's a certain fluidity to it, I think, in Spanish. And I don't even know, I can't really wrap my head around yet what that sort of means and sort of why that is. But I think it's interesting because I think there might be something interesting about having a perspective, the original writing in from a perspective of an American sort of thing, but now being told, you know, from the almost, it feels like more of the Mexican side, whatever it is. And so I don't know, maybe there's some sort of balance or something that gets found in that. I don't know, it's very interesting, though.
And part and parcel to that is the audience that is coming to see this, as I warned you, we were going to talk about the audience, because I was really interested in the fact that I was not expecting so many English voices around me at intermission and pre-show, but that's great. I think I think that really says something about the sort of conversation that this play and presenting this play in Spanish in this place, the sort of conversation that it's opening up. And have you found what has audience reaction been like? Who are the people that are coming to see it? Any reactions from the two of you as the folks who are greeting these folks night after night?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because I think Repertorio is very used to a Spanish speaking audience. And for example, for the Van Leer shows, they don't usually use translations. It's usually just in Spanish. But I know, like, for me, having, you know, grown up in the U.S., most of my, you know, my supporters, people who would come see it, friends, family, they all speak English. So it was very important to me to be able to have English speakers come and see it. So that was something that kind of fought for, to have the translation system, which is not perfect by any means. And I always wonder, I think there have been some issues with it in terms of the feed or static. You know, night after night, it's a different thing. And I always wonder what that audience is getting. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, it must be interesting. A lot of them have given good feedback saying that they are able to follow the story. And I think the translators were two wonderful actors who were, you know, five floors up watching a monitor.
Previous guest of the podcast, Lillian Rodriguez. Yes. She's been on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
She's great.
But yeah, so I think they, you know, they've also, after three performances, are kind of getting into the rhythm of the actors on stage. But I think it's interesting. I mean, the audience hearing the translations is hearing the original language, which I think is really fascinating. I hope they're not missing out on the experience.
I can't say that they would, mm-hmm. just from my own personal perspective, mm-hmm. because it is highly visual as mm-hmm. well. Can you talk a little bit about where your design aesthetic came from with the, can you give us an overview on the lovely audio medium of what the visual spectacle is that you present on stage from the start?
I mean, in general, I tend to go for a very, like, minimalist set, usually more with lights, just creating more of that ambience with sound, lights, audience interaction, which is hard in a theater like this. I've actually never worked on a proscenium before. So I'm much more used to like a, you know, thrust or black box type of situation. I worked with four brilliant designers, Carmen Martinez set, KJ Kim, who did costumes, and Shelly Rodriguez, who did lights, in addition to Chad, who did sound. And I think from the beginning, one of the things for the Van Leer Fellowship is that it has to be something that can be like taken up and down in an hour, basically, mm-hmm. because it's a repertory theater. They have a lot going on, and they have to be able to take the set apart quickly. So with Carmen, the set designer, we talked a lot about, you know, creating just the kind of environment that seems very bleak, lifeless. I mean, she went with this junkyard feel, which I think is perfect. Also because the stage directions are written, they're very beautiful, very poetic. I wish the audience could actually hear them. but it's very much like something becomes something, that kind of thing. So that was the feel that we were going with, where everything's already on the stage,
right.
and things can transform into different things in different environments. So that was kind of like the set idea. And then as for lights, Shelley, you know, she had a limited plot to work with because it's a repertory plot. So, you know, she kind of just got in here during tech and played around with things. and I think she, you know, she did a fantastic job with that.
It works.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it goes from the, you know, lifeless, colorless world at the beginning. In the middle, there's this whole section where, you know, her hope is building, her work is building. And it, even in the script, it says, like, it transforms into color from dust, I think, or something like that. And I think that's something that she totally achieved in that middle section. It becomes almost like a, more magical world, I want to say. And then towards the end, you know, it kind of, you know, goes back to to slightly bleaker.
Things get a little dark.
Yeah.
But it does end on a somewhat hopeful note, mm-hmm. possibly. Mm-hmm. Like we get a sense that things could be going in a direction, because this is part one of, you said, a trilogy, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's a cycle, so in that the storyline doesn't continue. Like,
I was about to say, so this
Madi
is
doesn't
a...
appear in the next one.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's interesting that, script-wise, it's sort of left ambiguous, and I don't even know what you guys sort of decided upon in terms of.
Yeah, we went with ambiguous as well, yeah. And I think most people have been getting that. They're all like outside people are just like, so we're not supposed to know what happens to her.
Yeah, that's kind of where I left it too. I was like, maybe it was a lost in translation thing because my Spanish is so bad. But no. I feel like it was kind of it could go either way from what I understood.
Good.
Okay. Success. That's the sound of success. We're at Repertorio Español. We're at West 27th Street. There's probably only going to be one more performance by the time the podcast lands, unfortunately. What is that last date? It's the
31st.
Yes. Awesome. So I'll have all the details up about that. Thank you both very much for doing
thank
this.
You.
Congrats.
Cool.
On a
thank
really
you
cool
so much.
Show.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you, Estefania and Matthew, for taking the time to chat with me after the show. Sadly, you have just one more chance to catch Así Van Los Fantasmas de México, Primera Parte, and that would be this Sunday, August 31st at 6:30 p.m. at Repertorio Español, 138 East 27th Street in Manhattan. Head to repertorio.org, that's repertorio.org, for tickets and more information. And in case you missed it in the interview, don't worry, non-Spanish speakers, there is live English translation available. Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please like it on Facebook, facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow at GoSeeAShow on Twitter and rate and or comment on the show's iTunes page. Until next time, go see a show.
Quick and painless, see?
Thank you.
This is great.